You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ12 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, and welcome to the Latin American History Podcast, episode 117, a brief overview of post-conquest Latin American history. Part 2, the Wars of Independence. Today we're moving on to the 1800s, a momentous century for Latin America. This was the century in which the region gained its independence, and as it decided what to do in the wake of that independence, it set patterns which still define the region's politics and society to this day. The 1800s were so important that it will sprawl across the next 3 episodes of this series. Today, we'll tell the stories of South America's independence and look at how Brazil's experience converged from that of Spanish America. First, though, let's look at the reasons why this change occurred. At the end of the last episode, we looked at the decline of Spain on the European stage and how it was running its empire, namely the reforms introduced to try and make it more efficient and profitable, as well as the limitations of those reforms. This then makes it easy to see that there was scope for dissatisfaction within the colonies. Yet this dissatisfaction was fairly muted. It's important here to break down Spanish American society by social class. When I say that dissatisfaction was muted, it was the attitudes of its upper classes which mattered at the time. It was their loyalty or rebelliousness which was crucial. As mentioned last episode, many indigenous and African inhabitants would not have been happy with the colonial structures in which they lived, and there were periodic rebellions. In the independence story, however, and in much of the politics which followed it, it was those upper classes who will be the protagonists. In that social hierarchy, those with Spanish ancestry made up the upper class. A distinction was made, however, especially in the earlier colonial period, between the peninsular Spaniards, those from Spain itself, and those who became known as criollos, or creoles in English, people whose parents, grandparents, or ancestors had come from Spain, but who were from the colony. You can see how this class might come to resent the motherland in the face of the Bourbon reforms and Spain's struggles. They saw themselves as equal, the same in fact, as their peers, but they were not always getting that recognition. There was a wider context for discontent as well. When the independence wars started, the French Revolution was a recent event. Its ideas of liberty and republicanism were reverberating around the European world, prompting political discussions about how society should be ordered and the utility of ancient monarchies. The criollos saw themselves as Europeans, transplanted ones, but Europeans nonetheless, and they were aware of these ideas. Much closer to home, and even more directly comparable, was the fact that the USA had managed to drive out the British and declare independence. This proved that, if desired, a colonial society could take on a major European power and win. The society they had created seemed to be functioning well, rather than descending into chaos. Yet the conditions were different in Spanish America. For the most part, that desire did not appear to exist among many criollos. The Americans were outraged about high taxation without corresponding political representation. In Spanish America, a deal had been made which kept the criollos happier than their northern counterparts. They acted as nodes through which Latin America's wealth could flow on its way to Europe. This meant that their societies would never be as developed as those of Europe, but they personally did very well, as they took their rewards for controlling the production of that wealth. Those Bourbon reforms we talked about towards the end of last episode, while making the empire and its economy more efficient, upset some of the criollos, as well as many others. In hindsight, we can perhaps draw links between them and the creation of conditions which led to independence. Some criollos resented being replaced as administrators of their local areas by Spaniards from Europe, and they were joined in their resentment of new taxes by pretty much everyone. The other pillar of colonial society, the church, was also alienated. They had enjoyed enormous economic power, thanks to the land they had been given, but now this was being chipped away, as some of that land was requisitioned for economic purposes. The role of Christianity in the sociological order was also declining, and while less tangible than the economics, this did create a sense of turmoil to a certain extent. The church and the crown in Spain and Latin America still stood in alliance. They were still utilizing that medieval pact, which held that the king and his rule were manifestations of God's will. His authority ultimately came from the heavens. This was why the church held so much economic and cultural power. It supported the king in this claim. Now, though, the church was alienated and less happy with the arrangement. But more damaging were those modern new ideas about the purpose and running of the state. As unpleasant as it might have been to be poor in a feudal system, it did at least provide meaning, a powerful explanation for the social order. If you believed in God, and that he had ordained the king and the social system, then it was easier to accept your lot. Now, though, the church and state were separating. Authority was becoming more secular, and so one of the crown's major sources of legitimacy was eroded, and it faced discontent from both traditionalists who wanted to return to the past and restore the church, as well as modernists who questioned the king's right to rule. There were dissidents then, and their tireless efforts laid the groundwork for the independence movements to come. But during the decades before those movements took off, those efforts saw very little reward. There were uprisings in Peru and Colombia. The first, though, was an indigenous rebellion, which looked back to the Inca past. The second Colombian one, though, was about taxes and the power of peninsular Spanish administrators. It was interesting because of the broad base from which it drew its support. Local members of the clergy were among those who encouraged it. There was a generation, small in number, who came immediately before the independence leaders, and who had little success for most of their lives as revolutionaries, but who helped create that next generation. That said, some of the most important of these did fight in the Wars of Independence when they eventually began, and some were even given titles like president of the not-yet-independent states. They were drawn from the criollo elite and had usually spent time in Europe where they were exposed to Enlightenment ideas, or had at least studied the French and United States revolutions. Francisco de Miranda was among the most prominent. Coming from Venezuela, he had actually fought in both of those wars and tried unsuccessfully to liberate his colony by invading it during the Spanish king's exile, which we will come on to in a minute. For this, the man who would actually liberate this part of Latin America, Simón Bolívar, considered him a traitor. In Colombia, Antonio Nariño spent 16 years in prison for translating Enlightenment political texts, which undermined Spanish authority. Unlike Miranda, he would fight alongside Bolívar in the eventual rebellion. In Argentina, Manuel Belgrano would immediately seize upon the fall of the Spanish king when it came and attempt to liberate Paraguay and northern Argentina. He too would continue the fight until the Spanish were driven out, but he was eclipsed to some extent by leaders who joined later, like José de San Martín. In Mexico, a group of conspirators in the city of Querétaro made the first attempt to break free of Spanish rule, and an associate of theirs, a priest named Manuel Legaldo, led the initial revolt in response to the king's fall. He was captured and killed relatively quickly, leaving the task of waging the independence war to others. Although perhaps more than anywhere and anyone else, his early efforts are remembered as crucial to independence in Mexico. I have spent this whole episode so far talking about how the independence developed in the years leading up to the rebellions. However, this is an exercise, to some extent, in joining dots with hindsight. At the time, it was not clear and inevitable that these rebellions would break out, and it took an enormous shock to the system to initiate them. This sounds contradictory, even implausible, but Spanish America's initial declarations of independence actually came as acts of loyalty to Spain. When Napoleon invaded Iberia as part of his attempts to conquer Europe, he deposed the Bourbon king and replaced him with his brother, Joseph Bonaparte. The administrators of the colonies now faced a choice. For the most part, they had no intention of being disloyal. But what did remaining loyal mean in this situation? They could accept the new monarchy and be loyal to this new Spain, or continue to hold the deposed king as their overall leader. All of them went for the second option, but this king was incapable of exercising his authority in the colonies. He was busy with the battle to regain Spain. The colonial administrators were forced to govern themselves independently for the first time, not out of choice, but out of necessity. There were 5.5 years of war in Europe before the Spanish king was restored to the throne, but by then, that loyalty in the colonies had disappeared. Having just thrown off foreign occupation, Spain found itself fighting a new war to continue its own occupation of its empire. The reasons for this about turn are complex, and we will deal with them in future episodes. Here, as with many issues we're covering in this overview series, I can only provide a basic outline. There were, of course, all of the factors I've mentioned already relating to the Bourbon reforms. Some of the more direct and immediate roots, however, lay in Spain. Among those who fought against the French in the Peninsular War, there was discord between different factions about what the restored government should look like should they win. Like in Latin America, some wanted to revert back to how things had been before, while others wanted reform. In the middle of the war, while besieged in the city of Cadiz, and without much control over either the rest of Spain or the empire, the loyalist Spanish government wrote the Constitution of 1812, built on a modern, liberal foundation of ideas like the separation of powers, freedom of the press, and a strong parliamentary system.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ12 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
When the king eventually did return to power, he sought to impose a more traditional, absolutist rule, with more power concentrated into his hands. But by now, the genie was out of the bottle. This created a huge amount of political turmoil in Spain, and as we shall see, in Latin America. There will still be conservative traditionalists in Latin America, even after independence, but many there found this political reversal intolerable, and it turned loyalists into revolutionaries. Another factor which motivated revolutionary thinking was the fear of external attack. In recent decades, Spain had proven unable to defend its colonies, even before it was reduced to controlling a tiny portion of its own country. Initially, it had actually allied with Napoleon, and this had seen powers like Britain blockade Spanish-American ports and even invade Buenos Aires twice. What was to stop France from taking over parts of Spanish America as part of the colonial front of the Peninsular War? And if the rising power of the USA were to take an interest, it was clear that Spain would be unable to help local defenders. Once enough momentum had been gained, the Wars of Independence went from being undesired to inevitable, and they broke out almost simultaneously. They were not quick and easy affairs, however. If you group them together as one phenomenon, they lasted roughly 25 years. I won't get bogged down into the military history here, but instead I will give a brief outline of the major figures. The most well-known is probably the previously mentioned Simón Bolívar, a Venezuelan who became the most prominent in the liberation of northern South America. Over the course of many campaigns, he and his generals won the independence of Venezuela, Colombia, which at the time included Panama, Ecuador, Peru, and Bolivia. As he made his way south, his counterpart heading north was José de San Martín. San Martín was an Argentine who had led the campaign to kick the Spanish out of his country, as well as Chile and Peru in part. He met with Bolívar and left the task of completing the liberation of Peru to him. Paraguay went its own way, with its own independence hero being General Rodríguez de Francia, and this began its trend of isolation and sitting apart from the rest of Spanish America. Uruguay's situation was complicated because of its position as a border state between Spanish and Portuguese America, as well as the federalist and centralist arguments which we will examine next episode. It quickly gained independence as part of the larger Rio de la Plata campaign, but broke away just as quickly. This then led to wars with Brazil, and the country followed a somewhat different path to its contemporaries. After the death of Hidalgo in Mexico, the struggle was taken up by former royalist army officer Agustín de Iturbide, once it switched sides that is, as well as the already dedicated revolutionary Vicente Guerrero. Here the battle for independence was relatively quick, taking only 11 years, although Spain did later make a small attempt to reconquer Mexico. Central America had its own set of independence heroes, and they were the ones who fought the campaigns against Spain there. They did so as part of the Mexican effort, however, and to begin with, they were part of newly independent Mexico. Due to the wider factors which we will discuss next episode, and which will define all of post-independent Spanish America in the next stage of their history, Central America soon broke away to form its own republic, before eventually breaking down into the smaller countries we know today. By around 1825, the Wars of Independence were largely finished. It wasn't until 1836, after the restored king died, that Spain finally recognised the new nations, though. There were exceptions to that 1825 date, however. On the mainland, Veracruz, Mexico's main port, Callao, Peru's equivalent, and Chiloé, an island off the mainland of Chile, held out as isolated Spanish outposts, restocked by sea for a while longer. It was the Spanish Caribbean, though, that was the big exception. As they usually are, there are exceptions within exceptions. The Dominican Republic joined the revolutions on the mainland, but for most of this period, its attempts to establish independence were unsuccessful, and consisted of small revolts rather than protracted wars like those in the other colonies. It did manage to break away in 1821, however, but after just 2 months, it was invaded by Haiti. The French had managed to wrest control of the whole island from Spain already, but then, when Haiti itself won its independence, the eastern part had gone back to Spain, thanks to help from Britain. Now, with their invasion, independent Haiti was in control, so it wasn't until 1844 that the Dominican Republic fought its second independence war, the one that would lead to lasting self-determination, and that was against its neighbour, rather than Spain. The rest of the Spanish Caribbean bucked the trend, and so Spain kept hold of Cuba and Puerto Rico. These two islands will have independence movements in the second half of the 19th century, but these need to be examined separately from the main Spanish independence wars, and we will do this later in this series. Brazil faced the same crisis as Spanish America. Portugal was invaded by Napoleon, along with Spain, but its story is very different. I mentioned earlier that Spain had initially allied with Napoleonic France, before Napoleon turned on it and deposed its king. One of the actions Spain took as part of this alliance was to assist with the invasion of Portugal. It was at this point that their paths began to diverge. While Spain's king would end up deposed, and his efforts to win his home country back left the colonies abandoned, Portugal's royal family had the chance to make a different choice. Rather than attempt to defend their small country, the royal family and their court, 10,000 people in all, fled to Rio de Janeiro. This made it the only European imperial power to have its power base in the colonies. Brazil was now the capital of an empire which spanned the globe, but which did not include the motherland. This ensured that the Portuguese crown did not face the crisis of legitimacy its Spanish equivalent was experiencing. Added to this was the fact that Brazil was home to an enormous population of enslaved Afro-Brazilians, something which also affected Cuba and perhaps ensured its loyalty. That Haitian nation, which invaded the Dominican Republic, had been formed from the first and only successful slave uprising in the colonial world. It sent shockwaves across the Atlantic and terrified colonial societies whose slave-owning members worried that it could be repeated. Some historians argue that this then helped persuade many in Brazil that loyalty to the crown was in their interest. A war of rebellion might open the door to a slave revolt, which could see their downfall. Those modern liberal ideas which had inspired Spanish-American revolutionaries had reached Brazil, though, and there were some minor uprisings. When Napoleon had been defeated, and when a liberal revolt occurred there, the Portuguese king decided to return to his liberated country, and left his son, Dom Pedro, to continue ruling Brazil. He prioritized Portugal, but he was afraid that now that Spanish America was almost independent, an independence war might break out in his own colony if the royal presence was suddenly removed. This is why he left his son behind. Once the king had established himself back in Portugal, he made attempts to reverse some of the concessions made to Brazil while it had been the capital of the empire, and the ruling class refused to accept the reimposition of the previous political order. Dom Pedro had a choice to make. He was recalled to Portugal, but chose to stay in his adopted homeland and defy his family. He declared Brazil independent. There was resistance from Portuguese soldiers stationed mainly in the north, but for the most part, and under pressure from their British allies, the Portuguese were unable to respond. The War of Independence lasted 3 years, but especially when compared with Spanish America's decades-long wars, Brazil ended up independent fairly bloodlessly, and it was a member of the royal family who had instigated this change. The presence of this royal family will help Brazil avoid many of the conflicts which will wreck Hispanic America. Next time we will look at those turbulent decades which followed the end of Spanish and Portuguese rule. As the newly established Latin American governments found out, winning independence is one thing, but consolidating that new power into stability is quite another. The 1800s would prove to be full of conflict, some of it between nations, but much of it internal, as advocates of competing visions for those young nations battled against each other. If you've enjoyed this episode and want to do something to support the show, one thing which really helps is to leave a review wherever you get your podcast from. If you've really enjoyed it and want to get access to one special extra episode per month, as well as the already released episodes, it's possible to sign up to become a friend of the podcast. There's a link with information about how to do this in the episode description. A huge thank you to everyone who's already done one of these things. And thank you to everyone for listening. You've been listening to the Latin American History Podcast, written and recorded by me, Max Argent, edited by Alex McNamara. If you've enjoyed the podcast and want to get access to extra episodes, you can become a friend of the podcast. There's information about how to do this in the episode description. The podcast is also available on YouTube by searching for the Latin American History Podcast. If you'd like to send me a message, or if you have any questions, you can email me at historyoflatinamericapodcast@gmail.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ12 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.